Welcome back to a new show. This is with two people that I've had on. We thought it'd be kind of neat. Actually, this is Frank Ficino's idea because Frank is always thinking. That's the reason. And so Frank said, hey, you know what would be kind of cool, TJ? He said, maybe we can get Phil DeLong to come on and do like a Halloween-type show. And, you know, Phil's a great psychic medium, healer. He's got many abilities. So before we get to any of that, first of all, let me introduce my guest. It is Frank Ficino from Florida. How you doing, Frank?
Good. Glad to be on board again, TJ.
Everybody knows you with the Flatwoods Monster, but you take an interest in a lot of different things too, don't you, Frank?
Yeah, sure do. My mind's always going here. It's some type of unsolved mystery.
And you've had some strange things. Remember we talked about this on the phone for hours about your dad and things passing away and things that went bump in the night at your house and...
Yeah, a lot of different stuff and interactions with spirits and ghosts, whatever you want to call them. This stuff's been around me for quite a few years.
Maybe we'll get into some of that because also with us is Reverend Dr. Phil DeLong. And now he only lives like 10 minutes from you, doesn't he?
That's correct.
Phil, how are you doing?
I am doing great, TJ. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you, Phil. Now, if you don't mind, maybe a little background, because you've been trained in so many different things. You have so many different abilities. What are some of the areas of your expertise?
I would say that from a medium point of view, it is talking to spirit. And from a healing point of from a healing stance, it's just taking the life force energies and directing that to make people whole.
Cool. And you've had, like, we've talked about this before, you've had shamanic training, what's considered shamanic training on working with those energies?
Yes, I have.
And you've had many, many other things. And Frank has seen, like, a ton of things in his life, and he's had some really cool things happen. First and foremost, you know, I know that the opinions that are going to be expressed by Dr. DeLong are not necessarily those of Frank or what he stands for years. How many years did you do the research with Flatwood Monster?
Close to 25 years now, TJ.
Wow. You started that back in what year was that then?
About 1991.
You just happened to be going through West Virginia. Is that what happened or what?
Some relatives who lived in Braxton County, and I kind of stumbled across a Flatwoods case. But what got me interested in the whole UFO field was the crop circles that were appearing over about a 100-acre area of my cousin's property out in the mountains.
Now, were they elaborate circles or were they just regular circles?
They weren't like the crop circles, elaborate with patterns. They were more like rings. And there was an area of about approximately 8-inch wide band, and the earth was actually burned.
Now,
and the soil wouldn't hold water, and he had them appearing two different times over the years. And about 1991, then about 1995 to 96, they appeared again.
Let me ask Phil this real quick, since we're talking about crop circles, and a lot of people say they're made by two guys from England who apparently go all over the world to do this. Phil, what is your take on, what do you pick up energetically about crop circles? What do you pick up about that?
I pick up that they are a source of energy that comes from either extraterrestrial or unidentified sources that prove that the existence of life form exists beyond our planet Earth. And when we look at rings, we're typically looking at a source from the sun, which represents alien existence. And when we look at sacred geometry symbols, it is something with the rings. We look at the golden mean rectangle or the golden mean spiral, and it's just the energy that connects us with other worlds.
And some of these are no doubt being faked. You would add that as well, would you say?
Some of them, but I would say the fake ones are hard to reproduce.
Mm-hmm.
It's just thinking of the number of combines you would have to do to create that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I want to give, the impression that we all know that maybe a couple of guys do fake someone's, probably the less elaborate ones. And then there are those, which I've always felt, that the crop circles were built. Sorry to cut you off, Frank. So you got interested in that when you saw the crop circles. And then what got you going on this story with the Flatwoods Monster?
Actually, somebody had shown me a newspaper article. There was an anniversary story, and there was some other fella in the area who was researching this thing called the Braxton County Monster. So they showed me the newspaper, and I was actually on my way out of town. I remember leaving that day off of the farm, and I said to my cousin, whom I was with, I said, well, let's go take a look where this place Flatwoods is. It was about 15 minutes away, so we drove from Frametown into Flatwoods, and the first thing I saw, TJ, was this big sign on the side of the road, "Welcome to Flatwoods, home of the Green Monster."
Yeah. That's cool.
And that's how I found out about it. And then I started making more frequent trips up to Braxton County. I started working with Colin Andrews, the crop circle enthusiast and expert, because nobody had come out of the mountains over the years and talked about these. The people in Braxton County were made fools out of with this Flatwoods Monster story back for over 50 years at the time I got involved. And what happened is they just figured it would be better left alone. So talking about UFOs and flying saucers seen over the area, which there were quite a few. I've seen some craft up there flying around over the area over the years. There's some pictures on my website of them, too. And crop circles, Flatwoods Monster, everybody just backed off, and all the locals just shut up. When I started getting involved into it, they started opening up to me because they believed in me and they trusted me and they believed in my research.
And you were able to talk to pretty much most of the people that were key eyewitnesses. Some have passed on since then. But the story goes that, was it 1952, 53?
That's correct, September 52.
September 52, there was a craft that... I know this is a story you love to tell, but can we go really quick through it?
Yeah, there was a craft that touched down on a Bailey Fisher farm in the back of the property of Kathleen May, and there was a bunch of kids that were playing pickup football that Friday night, and it was approximately 7:25, and this thing came over the school playground over the heads of these kids, and... the kids and the group, basically the way Mrs. May explained it to me, she was a primary witness to the monster. She says all the kids would gather up in town. There were no television sets. There was a handful of radios. So the big thing back then, which some people listening couldn't relate to that right now, is what they did is they played a lot of sandlot football and baseball. The kids were outdoors all the time. And they saw this big craft fly over their head and it touched down on the backfield of the Fisher farm. And in the end, Mrs. May and a bunch of these boys who were ages from about 5 years old up to 18 years old went to see what had touched down. En route to going up to see where this thing went down, they ran into this being that was called the Flatwoods Monster. And it was actually a mechanical craft that was like a probe-like ship, and it was hovering, and the groups encountered this. They all ran back to the house, and there was an investigation. For lack of better words, it was actually a posse was pulled together, TJ, and Mrs. May's father, Ailey Stewart Jr., who I interviewed, he went up there. They were up there with shotguns. They were all heavily armed, and they went up to look to see what had landed back there. By the time everybody went back up, this thing had taken off. It touched down on the back farm, it relocated into another field, and this Flatwoods Monster, which actually it was a machine, TJ, mm-hmm. It came out of the craft, hovered across the field, and went up behind a tree to the left of the path. And that's at the point where the witnesses were going to the far back of the property, they saw this thing to their left. They had no idea it was there, and that was kind of what scared the heck out of them. They all ran back to the house, and the rest of it's history from there. The press was receptive at first, and then they put a twist to the whole case, and the locals weren't too happy about it. And in the long run, Mrs. May and a bunch of the boys just ended up being quiet and didn't talk about this story because everybody made fools out of them. And then you compile that into with the locals up in Braxton County in Frametown who had been seeing UFOs up there for years. And there was actually a pretty well-documented case in Frametown that hit mainstream media through television. And you start rolling all this stuff together. Something was going on in Braxton County. And some of the locals up there said there may be a time portal, some type of a time warp. I don't know. Maybe Dr. Phil can get into that. But I had actually seen different crafts up there over the years. And a lot of the locals did as well. And when I said to them, how come nobody ever talks about this? They said after what we went through with the Flatwoods Monster, they just thought it was best just to be quiet. They were tired of being made fools out of.
If you go to Frank's website, he spent, like you said, 25 years of researching, talking to as many different people. There's much more to the story. We have talked in other shows where you said there was almost like a, well, there was a group of different, was it four different races, something like that, estimated four different types of craft? Was it four or more than that?
There were several seen that night, TJ.
Several, but I mean different, we felt were like different races, perhaps?
That were, yeah. Kind of, some people have brought that up to me, you know, with radio interviews and lectures, but that may be attributed because there were so many different types of craft seen that night. The original investigators who looked into the Flatwoods case, why they were baffled is because the Flatwoods craft that came in was actually oval-shaped. It was like a gigantic egg. It was approximately 36 by 18 foot tall, and there were so many other types of UFOs seen that night. There were round UFOs, there were discs, you know, the typical flying saucer with the dome, cigar-shaped objects. The original investigators, Ivan Sanderson and Gray Barker, couldn't figure out why there was such a varied amount of sightings when there was only one ship that went down. Well, that's when I started looking into this case through the Blue Book documents and some different newspaper articles and tying all the loose ends together, and I worked with my master map, and I figured out that there were several different types of craft scenes.
So we speculated that, you know, I mean, I've talked to other people that have been taken, abducted, who've written books about it. Some of them will say that they believe that there is a group of beings, actually almost like a federation, similar to Star Trek, what you see on Star Trek, that are working together to keeping us from destroying ourselves and maybe keeping other beings from doing those kind of things. And you and I kind of remember we speculated on that, Frank?
Right, correct.
And so I guess what I want to get on this, first of all, is I want to see what Dr. Phil has to say about the. Maybe I shouldn't call you Dr. Phil. We don't want people to think that the real, you know, the guy on TV, but Dr. DeLong is going to, Phil DeLong is going to tell us, first of all, what you feel of that event, and then my second question would be, is this a group of beings that are working with us or have been helping us? Go ahead, Phil.
As far as the Braxton County event that took place, these were beings that were coming to Earth to help us, and I believe that part of our government and also governments around the world were just more or less not really understanding of what was going on as far as help. I know that our government with President Eisenhower had met with some of these entities, and basically, there was a deal met with Eisenhower that he would take the technology that was offered versus peace throughout the world. So there are two types of entities that exist. There are the Galactic Federation that wants to help humanity, And there's another faction, which we would call the Reptilians, who would rather not necessarily help humanity, but keep us in the chaos that we are in.
Let me ask you this real quick, Phil, because as you're saying the reptilian ones, Frank, weren't those things reptilian-looking?
Well, my research, I was able to establish they were some type of reptile similar to snakes.
Now, is this what you're saying, Phil? Are you saying that these were benevolent or malevolent?
The ones in the Flatwoods Monster area, I say, are benevolent.
Okay.
And understand that even the races that existed here, and it goes way back to the Sumerian times and the ancient Egyptian times of the Anunnaki and Enkil and all these entities that evolved humanity up to the present time. So there has been somewhat of an interracial mix between the aliens themselves.
So these are not the reptilians you're talking about?
No. They would be another branch of the benevolent kind.
Okay.
Now, the malevolent kind, I believe, have underground bases all around the Earth. And this is, you know, unfortunately, where you would see the people on the milk cartons or the missing people.
Wow.
Where are they going? And they are, it's not a food for thought, but it is more or less I'm trying to remember the Charlton Heston movie with
Planet
Soylent Green or something like that, but feeding the population of the reptilians.
Oh, that was there was that TV show called V, wasn't there?
Yes.
Where they were feeding, using the humans to feed the hungry aliens.
But anyway, the Flatwoods Monsters were what I think, coming from a mothership, these objects, and they were here to either look at the progress of what Earth was and to eventually help humanity. And I think that with our government, it was all shoot them down and, you know, then talk later.
So that's what you're picking up just psychically from that, right?
That's correct.
Now, Frank, is this the first time? Go ahead.
I want to say, before I met Frank, I had no idea what the Braxton County Monster or that episode was.
Okay. Now, Frank, is this the first time you guys have discussed it in this way, or have you done that before?
No. It's kind of cool to get a different slant from Dr. Phil from the inside, but my research, I depended on documents,
right,
intelligence reports, but there's some stuff I may never know, TJ, and that's part of the mystery, and Dr. Phil could give a little insight to behind the scenes what I was not able to establish or figure out.
Well, I know that you have to deal with credibility, and you've done all your research talking to witnesses, but this is a fun show. We're doing this in a way to look at things and maybe get some answers that we just will never get. Why not get it from somebody that can tap into these things? And I think it was a great suggestion, Frank. I appreciate you bringing Phil in on this. But so, Phil, these people have been working with us for a while, these other beings?
Yes, they have. And they would be called the Galactic Federation. They can be a federation of aliens towards goodwill, but they also represent some of the spirit who have inhabited Mother Earth.
Do you know the groups like Syrians, Pleiadians? I mean, do you know what some of those groups are, Phil?
Yes, I do.
And what would they be?
The Pleiadians, sometimes we refer to them as Greys, but I believe the Greys are clones of them. And the Pleiadians are actually a life force that has been from the beginning of time. Okay. And they would say that one of the stars in the Pleiades is what the whole universe rotates around. Wow. So to say it's the center of the universe, it is the center of the universe where all creation started from.
So these beings, and I just had a show, we're talking about the Greys, where I interviewed a guy who has been taken several times in his life. He doesn't completely understand it. Some people I've talked to that have been taken are confused, but they still almost seem like there's a higher purpose behind what they're doing, like they're being prepared, and other ones are horrified, and other ones think it's an incredible experience with the Greys. Why is it so different? Do you know?
It is based on their programming of how they were brought up. And I believe that they are all being taken to prepare humanity for what's coming up next.
And what is coming up next?
There is going to be a process of chaos that we will see initially, and then there will be a collapse of governments, and then after that we will see us working in harmony.
How long is this, any idea about length of time that could take?
The last I heard was up to a year.
Really, another year before you think that these kind of things are going to come forward?
Yes. And actually, I was on a radio show last night, and I said 6 months, but
wow.
There were other people who had said it was a year. So I would say anywhere between 6 months and a year.
Now, if this comes forward, then, Frank, all the stuff you've been fighting to prove all these years, that's going to have a major impact on the way things are right now for you.
Right.
And do you believe that could happen, Frank?
I don't know, TJ. I don't even have any idea. The world is going right now, and the way this presidential election is going on, I don't know if that has anything to do with it. Maybe Dr. Phil could give a little insight on this, if the elections have anything to do with what's forthcoming.
Well, I can do that, but I want to say I will go back to what you said about people being abducted.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I look at it, because people have asked me, have you been abducted? And that could be a yes or a no, but it's in my, say, subconscious if I was abducted. But my response to them is, if we work collectively in that group consciousness, then we can help humanity ourselves, and that's part of astral projection or astral traveling, and it would be in that state where you're going to them to work and don't have to be abducted.
Right. Well, you know, another thing, too, when I understand about the Greys, and I read this a long time ago, people that are taken, we make choices before we even come here. So if I signed up, you know, because I'm doing the greater good, the work of the greater good, and I say, you know what, I am going to let you guys probe me and do whatever you want to me. It's like, and then we forget when we get here. It's like, oh, yeah. So part of
that. That's correct, but we also have the free will to change whatever contract we came in on.
Right. I agree with that, too. You know, the people I was interviewing, the man I interviewed, I said, I believe in our heart that we truly have control over everything. If we just believe it, we can change anything. And he said, nope, you can't get these beings to stop taking you. They will take you. You can get them to be nicer to you, but you can't get them to stop taking you.
Well, to answer your other question, there was a great psychic, I believe she was over in Russia or something, that had predicted that the last president of the United States would be our 44th president.
Hmm.
Happens to be Obama.
Interesting.
And then when we look at the Trump and energies that are coming forth with that, then if he is elected, then it could be in the realm of possibilities that we form a new government because the one that we have has just been put in shams the last, I won't say 8 years, but at least it's going back 20 years.
And it's really, it's part of really what has to come forward. I think, you know, you and I have talked about it, but it's part of this great shift we're going through. Let's move on to, if you guys are done, is there anything more you want to add to that?
No, pretty well said. Unless Dr. Phil wants to talk about the election, if he's got any good vibrations over here.
I don't wish to go into that. It's, you know, it's the people in power are going to try to hold on in power, and that means any election. And it is, they will find ways to manipulate the elections that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe that the elections are controlled. They put in two people, don't they, Phil? One of two choices that they want. Isn't that kind of how it works out?
Whoever gets elected is going to be controlled.
Mm-hmm. So, regardless of who it is.
And if you don't follow, then maybe you wind up like what happened to JFK, which maybe we'll talk about a little bit later on.
Yes.
So, Frank, the other day you sent me the email about Barbara Mayo, the case about her, and I vaguely remember this from the 70s because I was pretty young then. And this is a case, I'm going to let you explain it, and Phil's going to see what he picks up on it. Go ahead, Frank.
Well, it was back in October 1970, TJ. It was actually October 18th. And this girl, Barbara Mayo, she was a school teacher. She was hitchhiking from London to Catterick, north. She was actually going to a garage where her boyfriend's automobile was being repaired, and she was going to pick it up and drive it back to London. Well, she disappeared. She was found a few days later, about 200 miles from her home, and she was brutalized, raped, and she was strangled. And she was basically out in the woods and covered up with leaves. Well, this was the onset, TJ, for, at the time, and one of the biggest manhunts in British history. And the police department had interviewed over 120,000 people. The first couple of years, they took 50,000 statements, and the police had actually checked 28,000 criminal records in UK alone, and they were followed up with over 75,000 leads. And to this day, the case has not been solved. Now, there was something that was interesting. After this case came to light, TJ, there was another incident that they linked this to. And it actually, it was a girl called Jacqueline Ansel Lamb. She was an 18-year-old student teacher. She was murdered in the same typical fashion back in March, just about 6 months earlier. Well, in the long run, to make a long story short, when the mother was interviewed about the Mayo case, she felt that her daughter was never hitchhiking, because what she was doing, TJ, is she was hitchhiking from her home in London up to the point where she was going to pick the car up. She said the car was having problems. So she was hitchhiking north. She vanished. The boyfriend called in a couple days later, and he got the police involved in this case, which inevitably was one of the biggest manhunts ever. And today it's still unsolved. Well, over the years, TJ, there is said to have been by the police a link between these two girls. The areas, same general area, even though it's a wide region, the Mayo case and the other case with the other girl that disappeared in March. Now, the police admitted that there is a link between the two cases, and there was actually DNA found, and it was established there was a DNA fingerprint on the Mayo girl, and still all of these years later, the case is still unsolved. And the boyfriend who was involved in this case with Barbara Mayo, he is still trying to get information from the British government, and he's being stonewalled as of last year, TJ. So this is an ongoing case that's been in the eye of the world, especially in Britain. But I just thought it was an interesting case.
So it's being covered up, you think, Frank, right?
Oh, absolutely. Even
and why would they be covering it up? Who are they trying to protect?
I don't know. That's a good question, TJ. That's part of the mystery of this whole case. But the boyfriend, he actually, his name was, let me see here.
Yeah, I don't
give
have
me a,
I don't
give me a second here, TJ, because I actually, his name was Pollard, and he actually has all the Freedom of Information Act documents up on the internet as of June of last year, and he would corresponded with the government, and they actually, they're not telling him nothing. And so you figure this has been weighing on him and the public for all these years, and maybe Dr. Phil could give a little insight to this famous case here.
Yeah, get some insight from Phil, and then also maybe understand why they would cover this up. What do you think, Phil?
I believe she was killed in London and then driven up to this area and just dumped. And I believe it had to do with some of the crowd that she was involved in. I think it had to do with drugs and especially heroin. So it's just that wrong crowd that she got into. I believe the killer now is deceased. It is the other people around him are still alive. And it has to do with the cover-up. I believe that whoever was involved in the heroin distribution was working either with the police or the government. And it's either she overdosed there and they made it look like a murder and just disposed the body.
So this reaches up into other parts of the government, which also explains something I heard quite a while back, Phil and Frank, that the governments bring in their own drugs, this government being one of them, and sell it to the people, and they use that money to fund other projects and things like that. So are you kind of suggesting that our governments know and are involved in selling drugs to their own people?
Yes, exactly. And that's why they want to make it illegal.
And so this case really does have a deeper issue. Maybe that's why you grabbed onto it, Frank, because if that's true, you're recognizing there's something deeper, a greater truth that is hiding, and you're good at kind of finding those things, Frank, and maybe that's what this is about. Did you ever think that, Frank?
Yeah, absolutely.
That was covered.
For Mr. Pollard, who was the boyfriend, he's been chasing this story for years, and there's actually a little clip on YouTube about him speaking about the case just recently. For all of these years, he's been stonewalled, and it's really got to be troubling to the boyfriend to not understand what was going on and being lied to for all of these years. It seems there was some type of a setup with this whole case just to get the police off the trail, or maybe the police are the ones who led the public to believe it was a hitchhiking incident.
Mm. Now, how is it connected to this other woman?
Well, the other woman, her name was Jacqueline Ansel Lamb. She was also a student teacher. She was murdered about 6 months earlier, and what the police established that there was a link between these two murders. It was the same person, but they never released what the link
so you, are the police
was.
I guess I'm asking Phil, are the police lying about that, or was there a connection between these two?
There is a connection between the two, and I wouldn't be surprised if they knew each other, probably in their association with the drugs. And it has to do with the, not the police directly investigating it, but whoever is in that inner circle that knew them both.
Okay.
I think it's just an exposure that the police themselves didn't want this information leaked because it would get more or less a lot more questions directed towards the police investigators themselves.
Now, is there a way that you could, I don't even know if we should do this, but this thought hit me, is there a way that you could talk directly to Barbara Mayo and ask her questions and have her respond, Phil?
Yes, I could.
Would you want to do that, Frank? Does that sound like fun? Does that sound like something interesting to do?
Yeah, I'm sitting here next to Dr. Phil, and I just saw his eyes go blank on and out over here. So I don't know if he picked up on something. It's kind of spooky, TJ.
So, Phil, if you're ready, and I don't know how present you are. I'm guessing you're pretty present when you do these things. Some people have told me they're not, and they kind of step aside. But I guess you can communicate. You can ask her, right? What we're talking about, is there any accuracy in that, or what is her statement that she wants to make about this?
She is saying that where she was killed was in some, she's saying, flat in Soho District, wherever that is. And you have all the hippie things associated with it. The bead curtains and all that. It was a place where people would gather together and just put on a big party.
Remember, this is 1970, TJ.
Yeah, I know. Back then, it was a lot of drugs. Go ahead.
They're listening to, like, the Stones and Jimi Hendrix. Kind of that atmosphere, Led Zeppelin. It's really the hard rock and roll is what they're listening to. Somebody's shooting her up, and basically it is something that's the last thing that she remembers.
Mm.
And then it was from there. It was, she sees the perpetrators doing whatever they did to her body, because basically she just passed out on a bed. And I think that's when the rape took place. I'm getting the name of Peter. So as to who would be responsible for that.
Now, did she OD and pass away, or was she actually killed, strangled?
She just OD'd and passed away. The strangulation happened afterwards when they took the body out north of London. So more or less look at it. So the rape took place when she was OD'ing.
Okay. And that's the way, you know, as you look back in history, that's the way there was a lot of that went on in the 60s, late 60s, middle 60s, all the way into the early 70s. There was more of a culture of that kind of, those kind of things went on, and they probably still go on, but I mean, it was very prevalent, it seemed like, back then. Is there anything more you want to add about the Mayo case?
I'm just saying that the last name, I'm getting a K. I'm not really getting the last name. So,
as far as the guy that raped her?
Something like that. So.
About the Jacqueline Ansel Lamb case that took place 6 months earlier.
Same type of thing, only she was, you know, getting pumped up, but she had a resistance first. She didn't want to do that, and they kind of, like, forced it to her. So there was some type of, I guess, intervention as where they wanted to get her hooked into that, and she just fought. And from that point, I believe she was later killed for that, and then disposed of.
Same group of people, you think?
Same group of people.
Okay. Interesting.
And those connection, because both of these girls were also student teachers.
Or teachers and student teachers.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so they were running in the same crowd, maybe, and they just were all introduced to this particular group. Right. You can't see Dr. Phil's eyes, but he's kind of trancing out and waving his arms. And he's actually holding his arms up and simulating, like, shooting heroin. He's getting all of it. That he's channeling in. I know you can't see that, so I'm just going to throw that out there.
That's, well, I appreciate you letting me know. Is there anything more we want to add to that?
Have it brought to light again, or is this pretty much just over with? Do you think there'll be any other progressions with it?
There is going to be some justice coming out. There will be those two cases linked together, but the boyfriend has to push it, and he has to push it to it's almost like we have unsolved murders here, which they need to broadcast it out again over in the UK.
Bring it to light once again.
Yes.
And get the ball rolling. So by Mr. Pollard here getting the ball rolling with this Freedom of Information Act here, he's getting stonewalled, and he's on YouTube. He's just got to keep pushing it in the right direction and bring it out to light. Maybe this radio program will help that, Bill.
I certainly hope so.
That's interesting.
And who knows, God only knows how many other cases like this could be tied together with this. Could have been, say, like an epidemic of murders with this particular clique.
You know, one question I do want to ask you, Phil, because, and I think we probably have talked about this before, and Frank, I think you're aware of this as well, I'm sure, in our rambling conversations that we've had, you know, off the air at night. We've talked about a lot of different things, but you also have a lower vibration when you're into these kind of hardcore drugs. It's almost is influencing people to go down this path. So you have, we talked about reptilians, you have these energies out there. Aren't there, Frank, Phil, that these energies are really kind of behind all of that as well?
I totally agree with that. It's anything with drugs or alcohol or those lower vibrations such as fear will more or less poke holes into our auras, and then we become more vulnerable to negative things that are happening to us or negative influences. And the reptilians are the ones who put that fear out there to lower our guard.
So really, when you look at this case and these kind of cases, it really can kind of go back to, you know, from what I understand, reptilian beings and maybe other dimensional beings have control over governments and the chaos in the world and the drugs in our culture. So really, it's all kind of part of that, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Thank you. Anything more you want to add on that, Frank or Phil?
Well, Dr. Phil's at the helms here, unless he picks anything up on this case. But you think, basically, the bottom line is Dr. Phil thinks that this case is going to be brought to light once again. And the boyfriend, Mr. Pollard's got to keep pushing on it. But it's got to be frustrating dealing with the Freedom of Information and getting stonewalled all the time.
What's amazing is that this guy that was the boyfriend, we're talking how many years ago, right? And he still wants to get to some answers out of it.
Right.
So he's got to be pushing 80, I would think.
Yeah. Interesting. So moving on to what you and I have talked about before, Frank, and you said you looked into it a little bit as well, and I've had a guest on, the Kinross incident, which happened, I believe, in 1953, not far from where I'm at here in Upper Michigan, out over Lake Superior. What type of jet was that, Frank? Do you remember?
It was an F-89 Scorpion.
It was scrambled from Kinross Air Force Base because they found something on radar. And what happened to the jet, and they believed, you know, back then that the Sulaks might, you know, it was the Cold War, and they were afraid the Russians might bomb the Sulaks or do something. And so, obviously, they're trying to protect that area. There's not much up here that we have to worry about protecting, you know, in Upper Michigan. But that's one of the things. And Felix Mankla was aboard that jet. And also, the other fella was, what's his name again? I can't think right now. But he had a flight navigator, right?
That's correct.
Radar operator. And the two of them went out in this jet, and they basically just disappeared. And the government tried to make it sound like it was, well, accidental crash. But on radar, the people that were radar operators on the ground said it's like the two craft merged. And there's a man by the name of Gord Heath who did a lot of investigating on this, and he somehow feels that he's connected to this event in some way. He was born 9 months after this event, but he is so intrigued by it. His family knew all these things about it, and they should have no connection from it because they're from Minnesota, from Canada, and there's just no way. But it was just kind of, all of that's unique. But I guess what I want to get to on this with Phil is what his take is on what happened with the Kinross incident, if you don't mind, Phil.
Well, TJ, what I believe is it is some type of alien type intervention or abduction. And what it has to do is with our ley lines that are around the world. So ley lines are what we call Earth meridians. And like the human body has 12 meridians, the Earth has what I would call the ley lines, which connect the major vortexes all around the world. So with a ley line is just an energetic field that Earth kind of emanates, and it's what is called the crystalline grid as well. And these are forces of energy that are connected to the universe, and these are vibrations that you would say, if we have UFOs, that would be a beacon point to zoom in on, more or less. So if you're looking at the ley lines in Lake Superior, there is one that connects to one of the major nodes, which is the Bermuda Triangle, which goes through Michigan up into Lake Superior.
Wow, really? That's interesting.
And vortexes are what we call the focuses of energy all around the world. And we can look at them as Earth's chakras. So the three main nodes are the Bermuda Triangle, the Devil's Sea, and the Great Pyramid.
Devil's Sea in Japan, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And if you look at them at the top of the globe, then they're 120 degrees apart. And it's just a vortex of energy that is sent out as beacons. The Great Pyramid node is the one that is the strongest, and it prevents the Earth from wobbling on its rotation. So when we connect to the Bermuda Triangle, then you have several ley lines that radiate from that. And one of them goes right through the Lake Superior, which is why this is a focus of energy why people or UFOs are attracted to that.
What about Lake Michigan? Because I've heard like there's a Great Lakes triangle involving basically all the Great Lakes. Are those areas as well?
Yeah, there is. And all this goes back to the ley lines. Was described by Plato way back in 360 BC. Right? So it's nothing new, but as far as the Great Lakes triangles, if you want to call it a triangle, there is one that connects Michigan to Lake Superior and over to Lake Huron. And if you make it expanded a little better, it will include all the Erie in Ontario. But it's just a focus of energy.
So what you're saying that these guys, they experienced this UFO. Was this UFO just coming through a vortex? Is that what you're talking about?
That's correct.
And so, and I've heard that. Go ahead.
The vortex is just just energy fields that are magnetic and in nature, and it or electromagnetic or magnetic, and it is interdimensional as well. So the vortex, when you connect to a ley line, you can just, you know, pop in and here you are at this particular point in time, and then poof, you know, you're out in some other dimension.
So basically, when First Lieutenant Moncla and Second Lieutenant Wilson, he was the radar operator.
Okay.
On this.
Yeah. Robert Wilson, yep.
Scorpion. So they were scrambled on an intercept mission to investigate this UFO, and on radar, the jet and the UFOs, actually the bleeps turned into one bleep, and then the larger bleep, which was said to have been the UFO, took off on radar, and it was tracked, and there was no more track of the jet. So what happened to the jet? Was it swallowed up? Was it shot down? Because I know they've been looking for this jet in the waters for years, TJ. They've never found it.
Right. They said that there was a crash site. Remember, I think originally they said there was a crash site, and then a lot of people said, well, that doesn't look 100% accurate. They also said that what this UFO ran into was some kind of Canadian transport plane, not the UFO, but the F-89, that it had some kind of mishap, accidentally ran into a. And the Canadian government said, no, we never had anything in that area. They confirmed that was not one of ours. So I guess, Phil, what happened to the F-89?
That was transported inside this UFO. And it was looked at, laughed at, and then put for scrap and fuel.
What happened to the pilot and his radar operator?
The pilot and radar operator were, I wouldn't really say taken, but they were used for the purpose of assisting humanity at a cosmic level. So I think they were all sent out here, and their work is still continuing. It's almost like their spirit.
Okay. Let me get into, if you don't mind at this point, a little bit of what Gord Heath told me, and I want to see what you pick up on that, because Gord's story is amazing. Now, Gord believes that somehow he is the reincarnated Eugene Moncla, and his essence, Eugene's, because Eugene wanted to return to the, supposedly, according to Gord, what he remembers of this, and he remembers all this stuff, but Eugene wanted to come back, and Wilson was fine with not coming back, and that's something we probably agreed to before we even get here. But when Gord was 3 years old, he met Robert Wilson. This is like over 3 years after the plane disappeared, and Wilson was trying to get him to remember some things. Is there any connection in all of that? Do you sense anything with that?
As far as the reincarnation story?
That the energy of what was Eugene Moncla returned in the body of Gord Heath?
I believe that 100%.
Really?
So, and we have to look at, when we look at a spirit, right, it would be like a point of light within a greater light is our spirit, but if we imagine our spirit looking like a diamond, and we have, there's many facets on a diamond, so one of the facets would be, say, Philip DeLong, but another facet could be in the past, it could be Benjamin Franklin, and another facet in my spirit in the future could be the next Dalai Lama. And so, you know, when you say if this person is being, if you want to call it abducted or, you know, transported into another dimension and he decides to stay, there is possibilities that his spirit is residing there and that another facet of that spirit came down and reincarnated.
Interesting. That's interesting.
And as far as how fast you reincarnate has to do with your karmic experiences and also what kind of training you've had on the other side. And if that's what he wanted, that is what he got.
So here's how the story, you know, according to Gord, and it's cool that you feel that this is 100%, because I'm sure he's run into so many brick walls, and I can pass this on to him. He felt he could. He seems to have a memory of. He said when Eugene made the choice after being aboard this ship, they realized they couldn't come home, and Eugene wanted to see his family again, and he was told, well, the only way you can do that is if you take another body. And so he saw this, like, this facility in his mind filling up. They put him in some kind of thing, not to drown him, but it was filling up with some kind of liquid that allowed his soul to leave. And then his mother, who became pregnant shortly after, she was on board the ship as well. He has memory of his mother being, now, why would she be there? And so his essence entered into what became Gord, and Gord was born 9 months later. And then there's many stories of Gord finding the dog tags of Modkla and Wilson. And again, this is a family in Canada. What do they have to do with these two guys? And then when he was 3 years old, he was camping in Upper Michigan with his family, and he wandered off. This was actually over by an area called Grand Marais. And he saw this Robert Wilson come over to him, and he was trying to help him remember that he was Eugene Modkla. And just many of these different type of connections, and you're saying that you really believe that that's a facet of him as well.
Yes, I do. And I find it interesting that he met his mother on board.
He seems to remember his mother being on board this ship. And whenever he would bring this up to his parents afterwards, they would just freak out on him. And it was just a really weird thing.
I can imagine.
And it's like they didn't remember. There were times where they just didn't, like it was erased from their memory. Yet they knew about it, like almost like they knew that this was going to be it. And then when his dad was getting to the point where he was going to pass away, he was ill, I believe, he basically motioned to his son that his son was not his true son, that he was Eugene Modkla, that he was the spirit of Eugene Modkla. So there's a lot there, and Gord's had a lot of interaction with UFOs his whole life and that kind of thing, the whole family. Is that something that a lot of people, they say that in generations people have interactions like that?
Yes, that's correct. I believe that once you have experienced it, it will always be there. And it is another form of what we have to do is remember.
Now, Frank, you are not a stranger to all of this, and you've had some unusual things. How far down this road would you like to go?
Well, I want to know, was there a tie-in with Wilson to TJ?
What do you mean?
With the pilot, with the reincarnation, what about the radar operator? Because he was in this whole thing, too.
Gord Heath said that Wilson chose to stay, and he understood. He doesn't go into a great deal, but Wilson was not one to want to come back, whereas Moncla had a family, and he had children, and he just felt this connection to want to return. And Wilson, after that, after he met him, you know, when he was 3 years old, he never heard from him again after that. And I'm assuming that he stayed with the beings.
And that's free will.
Right. But I was going to ask you, Frank, there are some things that you are connected to, and I would love to ask Phil about, is there any way that you would have a problem with that?
What direction are you talking about?
You and I have talked about this before. Do you want me to ask some of the stuff that we've talked about?
Not right now at this point.
Okay, I understand. We'll do that off the air.
You probably... on Dr. Phil's face. I know that look. That means stay away.
Okay, that's cool. So we
and there's a lot of other stuff, TJ, with spirits and ghosts that have had intersections with over the years.
You know what? We'll get to those kind of things. We're going to be done with part one. This is a two-part show, and on the next show, you'll hear Frank's dad coming back to visit him. Woo! How's that, Frank?
All right.
My guests, Frank Pacino and Phil DeLong. Thank you, guys.